Welcome to part two of the NBA Eastern Conference preview, where we're going to be focusing on the top eight teams, the playoff teams, from the bottom to the top on the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. And it starts right now. Well, let's move to some of the playoff teams here. So we'll start with number eight. We're going to start with the Chicago Bulls. I think this team, Helly, is going to set shooting back. And when I say set them back, I mean as far as the peach basket days when Naismith was cutting out the bottoms of peach baskets. When you got Rondo, Wade, and Jimmy Butler sharing the ball on offense, it actually could be an interesting team, but the shooting, man. None of these guys are consistent outside shooters.
Don't forget that they have Michael Carter Williams, too, who can't hit the side of a bar.
God, I know. When they made that trade, I'm like, man, they really trying to build a construction company, right? Just building bricks.
So let me ask you. So what is it that I don't have them in the playoffs? Why do you have them in the playoffs?
I just think that when you have, like I said, Rondo, Wade, and Butler, I think if depending on how they share the ball on offense, it could be an interesting team. I really think, well, first of all, I think it needs to be Jimmy Butler's team. There shouldn't even be an argument about this either. I think Rondo and Wade should
only be there. There is going to be an argument. You know that.
I know, but I think Rondo and Wade should only be there to help take the pressure away from him. But
Cal, that's not going to happen.
I think it could. I think it could. There's a potential. There's a potential.
All right, let me ask you a couple questions.
All right.
Did Julian have him in the playoffs too, Chicago?
You know, it's a good question. Let me check.
Okay, let me ask you this. Who was their best player last year?
Oh, last year was Butler.
It was Paul Gasol. And Gasol's not on that team anymore.
I think it's Butler. We'll go on.
Two. Do you really think Fred Hoiberg as a coach is somebody who is the answer for this chemistry problem?
Oh, hell no. Not and listen, when it comes to Rondo, and that was going to be one of my questions I was going to ask you, how long do you think that Fred Hoiberg is going to last, just considering he's going to be so disregarded by Rondo? It's going to be borderline comical. I'll be the first to attest to that. But You see, in Miami, like, you know, obviously there were great players in Miami when it was him, Wade, Bosch, LeBron, Bosch, and everything else. But if you have an offense where Wade's moving, they're sharing the ball, like how they whipped it around in Miami, I think there's still some sort of DNA there where they're gonna come and play tough every night. And I think that's why I have them making the eighth.
I have them ninth.
Right.
So it's not like it's a big difference. But I think the reason why you have them in the playoffs is based on
pedigree,
past experience, based on who they are.
Yeah, pedigree.
But not based on 2016, 2017 season.
I have it on pedigree. I think they're going to come. Like, when I look at the starting lineup, you know, obviously those three. You got Robin Lopez and Taj Gibson, who's finally, he's probably like, yes, I finally get the fucking start after all these years.
Portis is going to start.
You think Portis is going to start?
He's not. I think he's going to start because Taj Gibson ain't staying healthy.
Taj Gibson.
I guarantee you, Gibson misses at least 15 games.
Well, Taj Gibson's projected to start anyway, so either way, he's gonna see some substantial minutes. I think they're still gonna be tough on defense, but again, it's
backcourt on defense is gonna be great.
Yeah, I think they're gonna be good on defense.
Saddle them and let them take shots all day long. It's gonna be like having like 10 guys on the line to block any kind of rushing.
Any type of penetration, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know what? This needs to saddle down in the paint because none of these guys can shoot.
Yeah, it's going to be
not
tough.
Not only that, one of the best shooters, in Mike Dunleavy, they had a trade in order to make room
for Wade.
For Wade. So
honestly,
anyway.
Their shooting really depends on Mirotic and Nikola Mirotic and Doug McDermott. And when I see
I think McBuckets is going to get some. And when I say
this going to depend on them, I mean basically almost all of it is going to their outside shooter is going to depend on those two guys. So
yeah, basically.
But like I said, I have them. You're right. I have them making the playoffs basically on pedigree. With that said, I have them being like the eighth spot. I don't see them being any higher than that. I can't see them. I know I have them in the mix as well as one of those teams that can either finish fifth or miss the playoffs. I don't have this team finishing fifth. I don't have this team finishing anywhere higher than eighth, honestly. All right, so we got the Atlanta Hawks at number seven. With D12 back in Atlanta, what's the better odds, Edley? Him returning to being the old Dwight Howard, looking like an old Dwight, or competing with Evander Holyfield and Shorty Lowe in another statistical category?
He's already there, quietly. Yeah. People don't know.
I'm surprised nobody knows this. You know, like,
I know, exactly. Yeah. You know what? Maybe that is because of that innocent kind of look that he has, but, you know.
And he's always smiling, but, yeah, you know, I think there's a better chance of him, adding another notch on that belt before pushing this team.
In Atlanta, in his hometown, most definitely. I mean, he's another one that acts like the Brooklyn Nets that doesn't need protection.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand what's his issue, man. But in regards to the team, for some reason, I don't expect to see Howard of Orlando Magic, because I think that Howard is gone through the injuries and all that stuff.
Mm.
But I do believe we'll get a better Howard than what we saw in L.A. and in Houston. Just because I believe in the coach.
Right.
I think they'll use him more. And they've always been a team that was very powerful in the front court. So, you know, I'm not saying that they were like Memphis where they were top heavy like that. But there was always a good balance between their front court and their offense and their back court, just in terms of utilization. So I think that he will get used. And Millsap is one of those guys that, as great as he is,
he's really underrated
passer too.
Yeah, he's really underrated. Honestly, he's impressed me. He actually had really impressed me on defense last year. Like, I'm not sure
he's great.
Yeah, did he make one of the All NBA defensive teams this year? I'm not sure if he did, but honestly, I had him down as finishing on the first or second team All Defense. Like, I thought he was amazing at certain points last year. Especially playing the small forward position at times. Like, I was really impressed with him.
So me, their issue is not really in the front court. It's really the back court, because you got the German dude.
Yeah, Dennis Schroeder.
What's his name? Huh?
Yeah, Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, Schroeder. He's going to finally get the spotlight. I liked him in spurts off the bench, because he's kind of like a scoring guard. I don't know how he's going to be as an everyday back.
30 minutes a night guy, 30-35 minutes a night guy. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know what? We really don't know about that. Corver, I mean, damn, isn't Corver like our age?
I know. He's at least 30s, and he didn't look good last year.
No. Like, the year before, that's what I'm saying. So, like, I mean, he got some mileage on his legs. They gave 70 million to Bazemore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Let's see how that works.
Right.
So, you know, that's why, I mean, they're still a playoff team, but, and they lost, I mean, yes, they got Howard, but they lost Horford, right? So some people, you know, you can argue about who's better. I think Horford in 2016 is the one I'd rather have. Even if you want to call it a moot point between those, their backcourt to me got weaker, so I expect them to drop, and they're an older team. And then again, Millsap, Millsap's another guy who's in a contract year. I think differently than with Milwaukee, Atlanta would probably do everything they can to re-sign him
to keep him. Yeah.
But yeah, you don't know if they start losing, what's going to happen, or if Millsap is like, you know, gives an idea that he doesn't want to re-sign.
I think it depends on Schroeder's potential. I mean, if he can give you what Jeff T gave you and brought to the table, at least, you know, like 90% of that at the very least, I think this team may not miss a beat. And when I say they don't miss a beat, I mean they're going to struggle to get out of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
but going back to Dwight Howard, I like that dynamic that you presented there with Howard and Horford. I actually don't think necessarily it's a downgrade. I think if D12 is healthy and motivated, we know for sure he's motivated because he's trying to get his name back. But if he's healthy as well, it actually might be an improvement from the center spot. Because as much as I like Horford, and Horford is a solid player, very good player, but if Dwight Howard's healthy and motivated, there's 20-20 games out of that guy, and you don't necessarily get that from Horford necessarily. You know, where he's impacting both sides of the floor.
I think that we might see a better Howard this year than we've seen in the last
few years.
Three years.
I think so.
But also at the same time, when I was doing a comparison between Horford and Howard, I'm just thinking about the mileage on his body as a comparison to Horford. Horford's about 30, but he just seems to be, his body just seems to be holding up a lot better than Howard.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. If he can get back some of that Orlando magic, I mean, I don't expect to get that game in, game out, but if he can bring some of those games on some special moments throughout the season, they could. I mean, as I said, they're still a playoff team. But as you said, I think the bigger question mark is that point guard and how short it is.
Number six, I got the New York Knicks. Now, we're making fun of our podcast that we had earlier this summer about the Kevin Durant and talking about solid playoff moves. We were killing our friend Kevin on the podcast about the New York Knicks. As time is going along, I kind of like this team, man. Listen, I think they're a solid playoff contender. You know, of course, if everyone remains healthy. I think New York, honestly, is going to love Brandon Jennings coming off the bench. Madison Square Garden was made for somebody like him, as well as Joakim Noah. And I think if Joakim Noah is another guy, if he's healthy, and for damn sure, you know he's motivated to come back home. I think this can be a really solid team.
It's funny because I had New York Knicks at 6-2, and I thought that was going to be a team or a position where you and Julian were going to torch me on. Mm-hmm. Because they've been a proverbial, bottom feeder for some years. But again, I have them 6, but they could easily swap with a team like Charlotte and be 11 where I had them at. But as you said, if all the stars are aligned, Carmelo, we've already talked about his maturity off the court this year. If he can bring that maturity onto the court,
really been impressive.
And how Porzingis has been playing,
yeah.
And how I believe he's going to continue to develop. As you said, Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose. I didn't necessarily like those trades, but for 1 year, this team might be special. Can I count on those going for 3-4 years? Probably not. But if everything goes well. And as I said, I think Brandon Jennings might very well be in contention for six man player of the year.
Oh, there's no question. He's gonna be New York fans' favorite, New York Knicks fans' favorite, especially at the Madison Square Garden. Like he's gonna be rocking that crowd some nights for sure.
I wouldn't be surprised. And as you said, if they start winning a little bit, especially how that New York crowd is, that their home crowd would be on front of them. It's front and center, where they'll be coming motivated each game. So, again, if they end up being out of the playoffs again, I'll shrug my shoulders like, that's the New York Knicks. But as I talked about, there's always a team in the East and the West. You know, we talked about before the podcast how Phoenix a few years ago surprised some folks, how Milwaukee surprised some folks making the playoffs, and then Boston when they did their run. To me, New York Knicks is primed to be that team in the East where, they go up a few notch. But at the same time, to me, I thought that team last year was Miami.
Yeah.
And I had them, I think I had them either second or third in the conference, and didn't exactly go that way. They ended up being in seventh or whatever the case it was.
So what do you think the better chances are going to be happening for this season? You think the Knicks will win 50 games or they're actually going to find Lakeisha?
They win 50 games. Put it that way. they ain't gonna need 50 wins to get the sixth seed.
No, for sure. For sure. But you know what? I think...
And Rose is off. He can actually play. He got acquitted today, so that helps.
If Porzingis' game can jump to an all-star level this season, I can actually see them winning 50 games. Granted, again, if they can remain healthy. But I can actually kind of see.
I think the I think the bigger is Melo. Melo has to be mature enough where he doesn't need to take 20-25 shots a game.
Yeah.
If he gets out of that mind frame where he's willing to pass the rock and yeah. willing to, you know, to play the one A as opposed to being the A player all the time, I think that is more of a reason for them winning 50 games than Porzingis. He will go as far as Melo will let him.
Well, granted, I think that with Melo, he's definitely, to me, he's still the guy right now until Porzingis really develops or jumps that level. He's still the guy. But if he
goes, he's the guy, but
what I'm saying is, yeah. what I'm saying is that if he can go from taking 25 shots a game to like 17 shots a game, because you know what, if Rose is healthy, you got to account for him too, right? So it's not just Porzingis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then like if he can get to like 16, 17 a game, and do everything else and kind of be multifaceted, then I think that's what, like I said, I can actually see them actually getting 50 games, whether they get it or not. It's a whole other story, but you can actually kind of see the potential of them getting it.
And again, I touched about how the Suns a few years ago made that playoff push, and their coach that was behind that success was Jeff Hornacek, which is now the head coach of the New York Knicks. I was one of those guys that, like, I think I was in the minority when they did that sign, where I liked it. And it's the first time that in Phil Jackson era now that he's actually gotten a coach that's outside the family, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's a good thing. Finally,
about time. By the way,
hopefully they get away from the triangle, and instead of trying to impose something kind of like in the D'Antoni style, where he's so rigid on wanting to play his system as opposed to taking the players you have and building a system around them. I think Jeff will do the Knicks some good on this year.
We got Detroit here at number five, but I don't know. I think we might have them just a little too high. But what I'll say is this. Will Andre Drummond follow suit and shoot free throws underhanded like the Rockets rookie? You know what, honestly? He needs to try just because he's the worst free throw shooter in NBA history for one season. And I'm afraid it can actually even get worse. I mean, even Shaq wasn't this bad from the line, and Shaq was horrendous. And I love Drummond's game. He's a beast otherwise, but you can't go far when your best player is comically bad from the free throw line like this. Like, dude, he shot 35% from the line last year, dude. 35%. You're not going anywhere as a franchise when your franchise guy is missing 65-70% of his free throws every night. That's ridiculous.
You know what? I'm going to say his name. I want to know what you know about, what you think about this guy. Boban Marjanovic.
You know what? I know he was like a social media sensation at certain points of the year last year. But I don't know. I still need to see a little more. I think he's a big boy. My God, he's huge. But he's huge.
I honestly think he's one of the bigger underappreciated or under the radar signings.
Yeah.
I honestly think, especially when you're in San Antonio, you play San Antonio, it's almost like you're playing college ball, where in a sense that not necessarily your skill set is orchestrated or maybe illustrated as much in that system, because it's in the system of to win. But I think that this guy has a lot of skill sets that people are going to be surprised what Detroit has fallen into. And then when it comes to shooting, I really like Harry Ellison that they got from Marquette as a rookie draft pick.
Okay.
I think he's going to be able to spread the floor. I think a full year with Tobias Harris and Reggie being injury free.
And sorry, can I cut you for one second? Sorry, just real quick. Orlando's got to be, Orlando gets like the L for that one, because how the hell do you lose Tobias Harris? And you know what, Helly? And I remember this because when Scott Skiles got to Orlando, I was like, yo, Tobias Harris is in trouble, because he had trouble with Milwaukee, right? A couple years back. And then he signs a long-term deal, a big contract with Orlando. And then what do? They bring in Scott Skiles. I'm sure he was probably sitting there like, man, are you kidding me right now? And then look, like 3 months later, the guy gets traded. What is he, like 24? Like, why would you get rid of this of his talent who's a power forward that can play inside and outside? Yeah, and he's not even there now. Like, stupid. It makes no sense. But sorry, go on.
And you know what, tell you the truth, part of me, I mean, I believe Detroit's team is better this year than last year.
Right.
Last year, they were an 8 seed. Yeah, I have them up to a 4. But realistically speaking, as we said, the East is really unpredictable. So when you think about the teams that we have in front of them, outside of, I think, the Atlanta Hawks, I mean, I had the Milwaukee Bucks, which was a team that was downgraded the year before. The New York Knicks was a team that was downgraded the year before. So really, the only team I really have them leapfrogging is Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Because as we get into the top four, the one team that's in the top four had, I believe, probably the best offseason in the East when it comes to player acquisition. And then the other top three were top three teams from the year before.
Yeah.
So I have Detroit at 5, but it's not like they're leapfrogging a whole lot of people. You know what I mean? So,
well, I mean,
those things we'll see.
Well, granted, I mean, Boston wasn't a top three team last year, but, and I know we're going to talk about them, but the last part I'll say about Detroit is last year I liked actually how they played the Cavaliers, even though they got swept. If you looked, 3 out of those 4 games, they played them hard. It's just, you know, when you're a young team, you don't got those reps under you, so, and then you're playing a team like Cleveland, who's, you know, been to the finals. They're led by LeBron.
No, just call out Reggie because he single-handedly cost them like 2 of those games.
Oh no, for sure, and I'll get to him in just a quick second. But I just overall, I just like how they played. They weren't afraid, and they challenged him. Remember how Stanley Johnson was trying to call out LeBron at certain points, which is
a
little crazy. But you can see like they weren't afraid, and that's important, right? Especially that they got that experience of playing in the playoffs. I think that will help them going forward. Losing Reggie Jackson for the next 2 months is going to be tough because I think Ish Smith is, I mean, he's a good signing, but you can't have him, you know, playing starters minutes every night, right? So I think that's where it gets a little tough. But I think when he gets back, hopefully let's hope that Reggie Jackson learned from last year's playoffs, because you're saying he cost him 2 games. He made some boneheaded, like, dumbass mistakes at critical points of the playoffs last year.
Yep.
It's almost like I feel like since he left Oklahoma City, he's almost trying to do too much. Like he's trying to prove that, you know what, I'm a starter.
And
you know what, I'm the guy now and I can do this. And he's got the talent to do that at some points. No, he's not Westbrook.
Like
he's not Irving.
He has a wall poster with darts.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, no, he's not an all-star and that type of thing. I like him. He's a solid player. But I just think, to me, every time I see him playing, and especially the players, I just feel like he's in his head too much, you know. So we'll see how that pans out, but and see if he's learned from that, you know. And then once again, this is another team that's well coached by Stan Van Gundy. So
I was just gonna mention that Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah,
I believe in his coaching, and he's one of those guys who can get more with less. That's why I wouldn't be surprised if we see Detroit was doing some success this year.
Okay. Now, we're going to talk about the Indiana Pacers. As you mentioned, this is the team here that had the best offseason in the East. I think, to be honest, I think they probably had the best offseason, like, underratedly, outside of Golden State, of course. But I loved the offseason moves that they made. Grabbing Jeff Teague. Grabbing Thaddeus Young to the starting lineup is huge. And, I mean, Hedley, you have somebody like Al Jefferson coming off the bench. Like, dog, are you serious? Yo, that's a huge bonus. Having Al Jefferson just practicing with Miles Turner every day only improves that kid's potential. You know what I mean?
I was just about to say, Miles Turner, to me, I just see him getting better after the success he had after his first year.
Yeah, and honestly, and everybody keeps talking about, you know, especially after Durant left Oklahoma City, everybody keeps talking about Westbrook being the favorite to win the MVP. But honestly, Hedley, I think people need to focus on Paul George doing that. Because I think, to me, he's a dark horse to win this MVP this year, especially if this team could win 50 to 55 games. Listen, like last year, as we all saw, he was a one-man army against the Raptors. And I think
– almost took us out.
Yeah, and I think playing this summer in Brazil – I think could even take his game to another level, especially coming off the fact that he broke his leg 2 years ago and now he's all the way back. And now you're adding this kind of talent around him on top of that too. I had in my list, I actually had Indiana second, but you know, we have them fourth here, but on my list, I had them second. I actually think that leap is going to be huge for them. I think the only thing we have to just count on is if we got to see what Nate McMillan is going to do. You know what I mean? In terms of, like, how is he going to help this team go forward? But
I think he's going to help them just fine. I mean, you're right. I mean, shoot, if they go higher than four, I won't be surprised. I mean, they were seven. I have them at four. I had them at four. But, I mean, for them to go up even higher, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I think honestly this puts them in the tier right now. As I said, I think the top four teams in the East, you know, we have them number four. But like I said again, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them in the conference finals this year, playing, you know, Cleveland, right? Like I think they're gonna really be tough. They're really gonna
to tell you the truth. Even if they are a four, I still probably see them in the conference final. I can definitely see them winning games on the road and having that because it's a veteran team.
Yeah, veteran, but young enough that they can still do damage for the next couple of years if they can keep everybody. Okay, so at number three, we got the Boston Celtics. I'll let you take this one first, Eddie. What are your thoughts on Boston before I get started?
Well, you know what? I'm actually going to change up my stance on Boston now. I said in the last segment that I believe that Indiana is going to make the conference finals, but then I just realized now that if they're the four seed, that's not going to happen because that means they have to play Cleveland in the second round. So with that said, Indiana is going to do everything in their power to avoid playing them in the playoffs, which means they can't be the four or the five seed. So I think Indiana is probably going to end up being the third in Boston, relegated to the fourth, which means Brad Stevens is going to have another first round. He'll make the first round for the first time, but then we'll have to bow out nicely to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round. I do like what Boston has done. I think Al Horford, although I don't, we can say this with about three quarters of the guys who got signed, I don't think he's worth that money, but I do think he's definitely an upgrade from the pound forward that they had before with Jared Sullinger. As you had mentioned prior, definitely they've lost a little bit in the backcourt with Evan Turner going to Portland. And you're right, he did play a lot of that point four because Isaiah Thomas, he's more of a scoring guard, so he was able to play point guard minute. But I think with what we didn't mention when we were talking offline, that what's his name, Bradley, I think he's going to do a lot of that point guard play now, and Thomas can still play off the ball. And as in regards to shooters, with both, I think Jaleel Brown that they drafted this year, and bringing back Gerald Green, and we know he comes with his basket full of shits and giggles, as we saw what happened last year with Miami, but. What is proven is he is a talent who can shoot and who can take it on off the dribble too, which is rare to have a guy who can do both, even though it might be sporadic at times. But that said, I know we have them third. I think they probably end up dropping a four. Brad Stevens gets out of the first round. They get the first round draft pick in 2017.
God.
life is still looking good for them in the future.
Life is still looking great for them in the future. Not even good, but like I'll touch on the Evan Turner thing really quickly. That I just really think that losing him is an underrated loss because I think he facilitated a lot for Boston on offense. He was their point forward. You know, he let Isaiah Thomas play off the ball and do what he's like, what he does best, which is score. So I think he was great in that aspect. I'm not sure who replaces that on the team. I know you're suggesting Bradley, but I don't think Bradley's really that type of player either. I know they're talking about Marcus Smart, and Marcus Smart has said that he wants to take that role on, but I'm not even sure about him either. Even though I have, you know, he did good things, really great things at Oklahoma State when he was in college. But I mean, you know, college and NBA is a whole different realm. And then plus, you know, with Evan Turner being 6'7", I mean, he can do things physically that a 6'3" Marcus Smart can't do, especially when you're playing the point forward position. With that said, you know, getting Horford, you know, you can learn to lose. You know, I mean, you'll live with losing Turner if you can get somebody like Al Horford on your team. He fits right into their culture because by all accounts, Horford is a guy that loves having like a tight-knit family, almost like a collegial, like a college-type atmosphere, and having like a camaraderie and chemistry, strong chemistry with his teammates. He tried to really endorse that in Atlanta, especially after Joe Johnson left. So I think this culture here in Boston, I think he's going to fit right in. I don't think, as much as I like Horford, his talents doesn't upgrade them to a whole other level. Like I don't see them leapfrogging Toronto or Cleveland in that sense, just because I think they're like another star away. And again, as you mentioned in the draft, like the fact that they're going to be owning Brooklyn's pick, so they're going to get a high lottery pick there, and then they own Brooklyn's pick outright in 2018, so they can swap with them next year, as we mentioned earlier, and then get Boston's pick outright in 2018. In one of the two drafts, either they're going to get a stud, a franchise-changing stud, or they're going to flip those picks for you know, another free agent, or not a free agent, but a possible star, a superstar, and then just really go to town. But I don't see Danny Ainge mortgaging the future for that. I think he's gonna keep at least one of those picks and play that smartly, just so that they can ride along further in the future with this stud that they can potentially be grabbing in the next two drafts. Regardless of what happens this year, their future is so bright, as they say, that they're gonna need shades on. They're gonna get some kind of stud. Who's going to be? I don't know. But, you know, somebody, some crazy player is coming to Boston out of that draft. And if it pans out,
and,
man.
And not to mention, they got stashed picks that are overseas that, you know, are just being ripe over there to, when they eventually do come over, could fit right in.
Yeah, definitely. Or again, as you say, flipping for something else. Like, they definitely got assets, man. They're like a strong stockbroker right now. Number two is Canada's own, the Raptors, the Toronto Raptors. Now, do you think they can improve from where they left off last year?
No. In a sense, they might be still a number two, but the gap between number one and number two is widened. I think last year there were only like a game difference between the two.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen this year. It's not going to be just them two at the top. There's going to be three and four is going to be a lot closer to them. I don't think the team is as good as last year. I think losing a guy like Biz hurts. I mean, it wasn't a question that we couldn't do anything. We didn't have the cap space, but at the end of the day, it's going to hurt us. We got Jared Sullinger for a reasonably priced at $6 million.
He lost some weight.
Huh? Yeah, he's lost weight. He's looking good. He's a solid, like a low block player. So in that sense, we do have a starting four, which we really didn't have last year because Patterson and
Scola.
Huh?
And Scola.
No. I'm talking about who we brought in last year.
Yeah, it was Scola.
Oh, yeah, Scola, yeah, sorry, yeah. Between those two, we really didn't have a starting four. So we actually do have a starting four now. But what Biz did for us off the bench and in the playoffs is going to be sorely missed. I think another year with Norman Powell is going to get him better. I do think with Carroll being healthy does make us better because he missed quite a chunk of the season last year.
Yeah, he only played 26 games, so...
Was it that many that he missed? He only played 22?
He only played 26 games.
Jeez, I didn't realize it was that little.
Yeah.
So, because of that, yes, we lost some with Biz, but we've gained where we have the four, and basically we have Carroll for a season as opposed to a quarter of a season last year. We still retain the second. Do we push Cleveland to six games? As you said, I don't know if they even make the second round, even though if they do get the second seed. And I don't see them having another, because we've had like three seasons in a row of franchise wins. I think that stops now.
Well, I want to touch on something Kyle Lowry said, I think last week, where he was talking about he might have figured out a way to maybe beat Cleveland this year. And among other things, I know he doesn't probably want to let the cat out of the bag, but one of the things he mentioned is about getting home court advantage, like that being important if they can get the number one seed. And it's funny when guys subscribe to that theory, just because remember a couple of years ago when, you know, Miami still had their super team, and the Pacers got the number one seed, and that was so important for them. They fought hard. They made sure they got that number one seed. And then, you know, as soon as they got to the conference finals, what did they do? They lost home court advantage within the first two games, and then the series is over. Point being, at the end of the day, when you're a championship team, it doesn't matter what's your seed, if you're first, second, or even third, or what have you. You got to win on the road. So the fact that they got completely demolished at Cleveland all three times that they played last year, it doesn't bode well for them going into this season unless they can figure that out, because it doesn't matter if they got home court advantage. Will they have a tougher time? Maybe. But again, if they don't, if Cleveland wins game one or game two, if God forbid they meet in the conference finals, it's not going to mean anything, because they're going to just go and get stomped out again in Cleveland, right? So for me, I'm like, that statement is, like, I'm surprised to hear him be like subscribing to that theory, but I, you know, as a player, I understand his viewpoint. But yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you're ranked. As I said before, you have to be able to win games on the road if you're going to be a champion or be a championship level team. So shooting for that number one, finishing the regular season in the number one spot, I think it's almost like fool's gold. It doesn't matter. And then on top of that too, I think more than anything else, they're at the point now where it's like, I don't necessarily care too much where they necessarily finish. I think the most important thing is, what has Lowry and DeRozan learned from this past playoff performance and their Olympic experience? That's the only thing that matters to me at this point. Even though they made it to the conference finals and, you know, it was the most successful season in Raptors history. I mean, hell, it was rocky as shit. You know what I mean? Like, it was rocky as hell. That whole playoff run, it looked ugly the whole time. You know, and at one point, I think Lowry and DeRozan didn't they have, like, the worst field goal shooting percentage? Both of them were in the top 10 as the worst field goal percentage.
Well, people don't realize that, and I always make this point when I tell people, we were a quarter away from losing game five on our home court, where we could have lost in the first round in potentially six games had we lost game five.
Right.
Like, we were that close.
Yeah.
It was a miracle, because I think we were down double digits.
And we came back.
With, like, mere minutes left. And we were playing like dog shit the whole game and came out of... We pulled that out at a rabbit's ass.
Right.
And had we not had that miracle quarter, they could have been bounced in the first round in like five or six.
Yeah.
So we were that close away of having yet another disastrous first round loss. Mind you, they pulled it out like good teams are supposed to do and turned it into the most successful season. But as you said, that playoff run was rocky as hell. Like, I was watching this game and I was like, yo, how are we even winning? Bad as we play, which can tell us, it could be, you know, if you want to put the glass half full, in a sense, it shows how good our team is with the fact that they were able to withstand this. Because don't forget, Val was out too. But
yeah. It
doesn't make me feel any more comfortable about our team. As you said, some of that stuff was fool's gold. Like, it wasn't all sweet last year.
No.
And what people got to realize, like, you look at a team like the Chicago Bulls who won six championships. How many times did they have the number one seed?
Yeah, it wasn't all the time. And that's the point.
I think maybe half the time.
Yeah, and when you're so, champion, I mean, when
as
you're
you said, the great team knows how to win on the road. And Cleveland, look, Cleveland won game seven on the road against against a team that had the best record in NBA history.
Exactly.
In terms of home record and in terms of overall record. So, yeah, is Cleveland going to be intimidated if they have to play game one on the road? Absolutely not.
No.
And the fact that they brought back the whole team, because finally J.R. Smith's contract negotiation has been finalized. They're bringing back the exact core. I mean, yeah, they lost Dele and they lost the center that's with the Lakers now. What's his name?
Yeah, Mozgov.
But for the most part, they have their core 7-8 deep team that won it for them last year, right? So the fact that Toronto even brought Cleveland to six games to me was a miracle in itself. To me, that was. There's no such thing as motivational wins or mental wins or whatever the case may be. To me, that was one, because I never expected them to get two games. I gave them one at best, if not a sweep. So they're coming off quite the high from the year before. I think there's going to be a slight letdown in terms of playoff aspirations. And again, as I said, winning 56 wins, obviously, I think they'll still be over 50, but it's probably closer to maybe 52 or so for this upcoming season.
Well, at the end of the day, the East got better. You know, as we keep saying, it got better. So I don't think they're going to – I mean, if they can get to that point again, that'll be great. I think if you can get a full season out of Damari Carroll, that'll be great. They struggled a lot on offense in terms of just making – like just the way their play structure was set up. So – hopefully that improves a little bit, but like I said again before, it all depends on what happens with Lowry and DeRozan on how they basically how do they bounce back from what they went through in that playoff run. Like, what have they learned? Have they learned from some of the mistakes that they made? And are they going to use that to improve going forward? As well as the improvement of Val, because I think Valanciunas finally he showed, especially against that series in Miami before he got hurt. I mean, he basically bitched out Whiteside for a good chunk of that series before they both got hurt. So, I mean, if he can stay with that, I mean, you might really have something. I still don't think it's better than what Cleveland's got, but, you know, I think they'll still be tough. Like, it's funny, people are just writing them off. Like, nobody's really talking about them when you hear all these previews and you read all these reports and stuff for this year. But I think a lot of that to do is just how the way that they performed in the playoffs last year was just so ugly. And they really struggle.
Well, I mean, part of the ugliness is because, I mean, we talk about Valanciunas, and I put some of the blame on Casey, where if you want him to develop more and be more consistent, you need to get the rock more. Yeah. Because we have guards who shoot a lot. And they're the type of guards who keep – DeRozan, to me, is a volume shooter. And Lowry's one of those guys who he will shoot out of a slump. He doesn't care how bad he's shooting. He always thinks he's going to get the next one in. And don't get me wrong, you need to have that kind of tough mentality sometimes, but it sometimes raises havoc on the team, especially when you got players and gifted players that deserve to get a little bit more billing. Now, let me ask you this question. Lowry, I think, is turning at the end of this year. He might be either 30 or 31. Do you re-sign him? Which is going to be buku money because the cap is rising yet again, and we've already given a shitload to DeRozan. Or do you separate the nucleus and go after somebody else and see what kind of pieces you can get with Lowry?
Well, who else can you get? I mean, if to replace Lowry, do you go after Steph? I mean, is Steph going to come back home? I don't know.
I mean, Steph's not. Come on, let's not be stupid now. Do you trade him? Because don't forget, we got two picks coming up this season, because we got Milwaukee's pick when we traded Vasquez. So do we package him up in a deal and see what we can get and see what the market says, or do we hold on to him and give him max money? Yeah. And be happy with second round play, because if it's not Cleveland, there's either Boston or another team, or Indiana is going to be jumping frog in us. So
yeah, it's tough. Honestly, I don't even know how I can answer that. I think if you sign him to, it's going to be tough because he's going to command money on the open market, and his resume the last couple of years is definitely going to dictate that. All NBA spot, you know, two-time All-Star starter, you know, Olympian. You know, he's probably going to be starting in the All-Star game for the third year in a row. You know, we got that Yao Ming China type of backing with the Canadian fan base when it comes to voting for All-Star games. So he's probably going to get another one there. Yeah, it's tough, man.
And not to mention, his contract that he signed was very fair in a sense that I expected it was going to be a little bit higher than, you know, the fact that he signed from, it was 4 years, $48 million, it was a $12 million average, was lower than I expected. So he probably is like, you know what, I gave you a little discount.
Oh, no, he's trying to, he's not hearing nothing less than the max to come back here,
sure. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And I mean, it's, yeah, it's
tough. He might do the customary, like, mellow and take some of the shelvings on the top, off the top. But, you know, same thing like what DeRozan did, but for the most part, we're going to have to pay
him. I think we're going to have to pay it because if you don't, and you don't replace him with somebody at his level or better, then you're basically, you're taking a step back, you know, and after all the progress that we've made, I think it's hard to go backwards. I don't even think Masai wants to do that. And Masai knows who's, you know, like he knows how important Lowry is to this franchise right now. So I could definitely see him signing him back. Last but not least, obviously the Cavaliers. The only thing I'm going to ask you is this, really, because, you know, obviously we know nobody's beating them in this conference. So I'll just present this scenario to you. If LeBron James meets up with Golden State in the finals and wins again, does he now get pushed up into the MJ discussion legitimately now?
He's never going to be.
And hold on. Let me finish. Because I'm just saying this for this reason. You basically beat a 73-win team in their prime, coming off fresh off a championship. They add a top three player in Durant, and then you beat them again. Like what would that be worth to LeBron? Because by that time, if that happens, that'll be title number four.
Yeah, it won't happen. First of all, and two, 6-for-6.
Yeah, no.
You can never match that, in my opinion. So, people talk about him in the same breath now. To each their own. That's just good conversation piece. Because let's be real, there's not going to be another Michael. It's not LeBron. He's the closest. He might be the closest thing playing right now. Now that Kobe's out, and even Kobe, when people talked about that with Kobe, I was like, it made me chuckle. People got to do that because the media has to talk about something. But there's nothing about this upcoming season that would change my mind about that. The more interesting thing of this season, in terms of predictability, because I with them getting number one seed, is to me is as carved in stone as the Suns coming up tomorrow. Is will Chloe go to Cleveland and watch some games over there?
Will who? Sorry.
Will Chloe go to Cleveland and watch some games over there? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yes. Like, you're gonna see some Kardashian love.
Yeah. I mean, that's to me like that's more the mystery about than if Cleveland winning getting number one. What's going on with that? Will Love come out of his slump over the last 2 years and play a little bit more consistent ball? All these little side conversations that we could talk about is more intriguing, because them winning the number one seed is as good as gold, in my opinion.
Yeah, they don't care. And what I'll say is this. Well, just in terms of the question that I was asking, I don't put anybody above Jordan, even though I'm a Magic Johnson fan at heart. And that's my favorite player of all time. I don't put nobody above Michael Jordan. But with that said, I think if LeBron was to do that and beat Golden State this year, he would have had better finals victories in terms of the type of competition, in terms of the type of level of talent that they had to play up against in the finals. I think his wins would be better than Michael Jordan's wins, even though Michael Jordan.
Kevin, that's not happening. They're not beating.
Well, let's. I mean, let's
with Kevin Durant.
Well, let's see. Because I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. I've never seen a champion come along the following season with less pressure to win than Cleveland, in terms of less pressure to repeat. Just because Golden State signing Kevin Durant, it takes the shine off of them winning the title. I think the pressure is back on Golden State. Like, honestly. You would make it. You would honestly. It honestly seems like it's Golden State that's coming back to repeat. the way the news circulation has been on them all summer long, and deservedly so, because when you sign somebody like Durant, I mean, geez, you know, that changes the whole landscape of the NBA. But I think there's almost no pressure on Cleveland. The only pressure Cleveland has is for them to make it to the finals. Like, if they lose this year in the finals, nobody's gonna be like, oh, what the hell, they didn't repeat. You know what I mean? They're gonna be like, well, they lost to, like, friggin' the Justice League, basically, right? So, like, I've never seen it a champion come in with less pressure than those guys. Like, it's just, to me, I just think that's insane.
Yeah, when the Detroit Pistons won, they really didn't have any pressure.
But
next year,
the thing is, they went back to the finals though the following year. Like, you knew they were still tough.
Yeah, and Cleveland's going back to the finals. Yeah. I mean, that's inevitable. I mean, that's not really pressure.
But Headley, I'm saying, but you're using that the Pistons analogy. But even when they won, and I'm sure you're talking about the Ben Wallace Pistons, right?
Yeah.
You didn't think, okay, well, the next year some other teams totally got them beat. You didn't think that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like Calvin, there's never been another time where a team won the most games in history, and then afterwards added arguably the best player in the league.
Yeah, and that's never happened before. Yeah, and that's why I said the pressure on them is minimal, I would think, almost.
But yeah, but rightfully so. Golden State wasn't supposed to win this. I mean, not Golden State. Cleveland wasn't supposed to win this. This was supposed to be, I mean, Golden State had, they got the best record in basketball. They had the best home court record in basketball. They had the best start to the beginning of a season in basketball history. I mean, they had three perennial All-Stars. I mean, it was their season to win, and then they lost in a Game 7. So for them to have that kind of season and now arguably added the best player in the NBA right now, I mean, most people will tell you it's still LeBron James, but you do have some people there that would be like, yo, it could be KD. And they add that type of talent to the threesome that they already had.
Yeah, and I think I was going to say that I think the biggest question that I have personally is just, like, I guess what you would expect for every, you know, NBA champion is basically, are they going to be able to stay hungry after winning it all? And I think the biggest question is, can Kyrie stay healthy enough for this team to try to at least attempt to go back to back? Because I think he's another guy that's, we talked about Bradley Beal earlier, but you know, Kyrie Irving is a guy that gets hurt often himself. I don't think he's played more than 70 games. I don't even think he's done that even once. So, you know, yeah. So I think with him going forward, like if he's healthy, then I think they really got a shot, because when you win, there's a level of confidence that just breeds inside of you after you win a title. So, like, I think even though everybody else has them as, you know, they're going to be knocked out by Golden State, I know sure as hell they're not thinking that. But I think it all depends on the health of Kyrie Irving. If he's not healthy, then they don't have a chance. But it all depends on that.
It's like what we talked before. When Bradley Beal gets injured, he's gone for the whole season. Mm-hmm. And the difference this year is, like, Kyrie Irving lost minutes. I mean, he didn't play until January. But he played... and he played the end of the season. It's a difference when you miss 20 games at the start of the season, or 25 games at the start of the season, or 30 games at the start of the season, as opposed to losing that at the end of the season.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
He's still there. He's still there at crunch time. So it's not a question if he stays healthy, because the regular season is almost like a wash. It's almost like a preseason that's going to be 82 games. If he misses time at the beginning or the middle, it's really not that important. It's really, is he healthy at the end of the season?
Yeah.
So if he plays 70 games or 60 games, but those 60 games are at the tier end of the season, they'll be primed for a rematch. And I was one. And remember, when we did this last year, I was one of those guys that really felt that the pressure was more on LeBron to get that first victory then on Golden State, just because he's had about, I think he's lost four times in the finals. So just in terms of his own legacy, and the fact that the pressure of Cleveland haven't won anything, any major championships in like decades, he had his own set of pressure. But not to say that, you know, because he won one, he can go sip on a tequila on the beach now because he brought it to Cleveland. I don't necessarily think that the pressure the monkey's off the back, so to speak, where at least he got one, brought it back to Cleveland. If they lose in the finals, will people start pitching rocks at them? I don't think so.
Well,
if Golden State loses again, if they lose a second time, when realistically speaking, this team should have been a trilogy, I think the pressure is more. At least I think the pressure is more on them, as you mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. But I think the only pressure really on LeBron is just basically adding to his legacy, you know, and stacking that legacy to match the very best that's ever played the game. I think that's where his head is at right now. And he even said it, because as you said, he's trying to chase Michael Jordan's ghost, but that's not a ghost he can chase. But he's going to try and add to his legacy, you know, and go from there. But I mean, other than that, like I said, they don't have pressure the same way Golden State has, you know.
If we say Golden State, but don't forget, Golden State has a championship. KD doesn't have one.
I know.
And the whole point of why KD did that jump was to finally get that elusive ring.
Yeah.
So as much as we say, you know, Golden State, but you can imagine KD is like, you know, this is the whole reason why he got out. And I was reading the Rolling Stone article that came out today, was he wanted to be selfish for the first time in his career and in his life. And he decided he would go where the best opportunity for him to win. So he's not going to Golden State just to make it to the finals. I mean, he's been to the finals before.
Yeah.
He's trying to get that elusive ring. And anything less than them winning multiple rings, same way as they said when the big three came together with Miami, is that would be a loser case. He did not make this move to chase a championship. This is for multiple championships.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anyways, let's end off this podcast really quick. But basically, it's like I said before at the beginning of the podcast, it's Cleveland and the rest of them.
The Donna Ross and the
Supremes, basically, right? It's basically the Cavaliers and the Jackson Five. Like that's
the Gladys Knights and the Pimps. It's basically them and everybody else. Yeah,
they're the Supremes, they're Tito's, they're the Pimps, they're the I don't know what else you can think of, but you know, they're the Commodores without right Lionel Richie. Like that's you know what I'm saying? Like it is what it is, man. So the Destiny's Child without Beyonce. But like I said, man, thanks once again for coming on the app today, sir. And you know,
no doubt, man.
We'll definitely have you back, you know, as usual once again. You know,
definitely have you back, dude. I got credits in this joint, man. You forgot?
Yeah. I'm gonna send the paperwork. Let me get back to you.
I'm gonna write that in blood.
You do that. As usual, thank you so much for listening to the App Podcast. In the words of DJ Khaled, I appreciate you. Another one. To subscribe to the podcast and the blog, make sure you stay right here and click onto the follow button and become a subscriber to South Shore Ave. As well, you can catch up on all the podcasts that we've done throughout this year on the South Shore Ave radio tab. And also, stay tuned for the Western Conference preview tomorrow as well. Once again, for Headley, this is Kyle C. And you've just tuned in to the Ave Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until tomorrow, folks, peace.